The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter number 13, Text number 9, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari, recorded on October 20th, 2012, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kvachit Nigirna Ajagara Ahina Jana Na Avaiti Kinchit Vipine Abhavidha Dashta Sma Shete Kvacha Dandashukai Andha Andakupe Patita Tamisre Kvachinyagirno Jagarahina Jano Navaiti Kinchid Vipine Pavidha Dashtasmash Shete Kvachadanda Shukair And Hon the Coupe Patitas Tamisre Kvachin Nagirno Jagahahinajano Navaiti kinchid vipine pavidha Dashtasmashete kvachadanda shukair And hon the coupe patitas tamisre Kvachit, sometimes, nigirna, being swallowed, ajagara ahina, by the great snake known as the python, jana, the conditioned soul, na, not. Avaiti understands kinchit anything vipine in the forest of avidha pierced by arrows of suffering dashta being bitten sma indeed Shete lies down. Kvacha, sometimes, Dandashukai, by other kinds of snakes. Andha, blind. Andakupe, in a blind well. Patita, fallen. Tamisre, in a hellish condition of life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for your mercy. The conditioned soul in the material world is sometimes swallowed by a python or crushed. At such a time, he is left lying in the forest like a dead person devoid of consciousness and knowledge. Sometimes other poisonous snakes bite him, being blind to his consciousness. He falls down into a dark well of hellish life with no hope of being rescued. Purport. When one becomes unconscious due to being bitten by a snake, one cannot understand what is taking place outside the body. This unconscious condition is the condition of deep sleep. Similarly, the conditioned soul is actually sleeping on the lap of the illusory energy, Bhaktivinoda Kurasan Katta Nidra Jao Maya Pisha Chirakole. O living entity, how long will you sleep in this condition on the lap of the illusory energy? People do not understand that they are actually sleeping in this material world. Being devoid of knowledge of spiritual life, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there says, Eneche Garshodi Maya Nashibara Lagi Hadinama Mahamantra Laotuma Magi. I have brought medicine to awaken every living entity from the perpetual sleep. Please receive the holy name of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and awaken. The Katha Upanishad 1.3.14 also says, Utishtha Jagratta Prapya Varan Nibodhata. O living entity, you are sleeping in this material world. Please get up and take advantage of your human form of life. The sleeping condition means loss of all knowledge. In Bhagavad Gita 2.69, it is also said, Ya nishasarabhutanam tasham jagarti samyami. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. Even in the higher planets, everyone is under the spell of the illusory energy. No one is really interested in the real values of life. The sleeping condition called kalasarpa, the time factor, keeps the conditioned soul in a state of ignorance. And therefore, pure consciousness is lost. In the material world, there are many blind wells, and if one falls down in one, there is no chance of being rescued. In a state of sleep, one remains perpetually bitten by some animals, especially snakes.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganavitam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadudam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine.
So, what is the Bhagavatam telling us? Bhagavatam is telling us we are asleep. So if you're sleeping, should you keep sleeping? Or should you wake up? Of course, if you're having a pleasant sleep, one may want to keep sleeping. But if you're having a nightmare, then it's very good if you wake up. So to the fact that this material existence is a sort of sleeping condition of the living entity. And actually it is a nightmare. Then why do they think they're enjoying? It's a nightmare. You see, why do they think they're enjoying? Do you know why they think they're enjoying? Anandamaya Vyasa, the nature of a living entity is he is enjoyer. If you put him into a suffering condition for millions and billions of lifetimes, because he has the nature to enjoy, sooner or later he will start imagining that He will start hallucinating, you see, that suffering is enjoyment. This principle was even stated by one author back in the 60s. Richard Farina, he wrote one book, it was called I've Been Down So Long, It Looks Like Up to Me, you see. So this is our position. We've been suffering for so long, we imagine it's enjoyment, you see. They say home, sweet home, but actually it's bitter. It's not sweet at all, because that's all they have, and they have this innate tendency. There's a homing tendency. It's like an animal. He can be taken away from his home, but he can get back without any roadmap. He has the ability to find his way back. Sometimes there's stories of some dog, you know. He's taken 100 miles away from his home, but he can get back because he has a homing, an intuitive sense of how to get home. So we have this innate tendency to want to get back to home. Because we're not able to get there, we imagine this place we are stuck right now, the material world, to be our home. That's it. We just imagine it. You know, just simply imagine it. And in this condition, we suffer trying to pretend that we're actually happy. The person is miserable. You ask him how he's doing. Fine. Is it? Simply imagination. So how do we, the real bottom line is then, how do we get out of this sleeping condition? That's the real bottom line, you see. We're being cheated by the illusory energy, thinking that we're getting actual enjoyment here, when actually we're just getting kicked by Maya again and again. That's all. Kicked again and again and again. And every minute we're being kicked. Adiatmic, adibhotic, and adidaivic miseries are kicking us at every minute. The tax man doesn't get you, the mosquitoes will. You see. Every minute we're being tortured in one way or by the other. Every minute we're being tortured. What did Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur say? No fit place for a gentleman to live. This is a nasty place. I remember Prabhupada was walking on the beach with my godbrother. He was a brahmachari at the time. Bhakti, he was Sarup Damodar Das Brahmachari. He became Bhakti Sarup Damodar Maharaj. But he was a PhD in biology, and Prabhupada would have discussions about science every day on the morning walks in Los Angeles. Because now he is a scientist, is a PhD scientist, disciple. So he'd have very interesting talks. He would have Bhakti Sarup Damodar argue from the scientific viewpoint, and then Prabhupada would defeat it. So Prabhupada was talking about sex life, you see, that sex life is the greatest pleasure here. They go wild over sex pleasure. They're going crazy over sex, you see. That's their one enjoyment, you see, sex pleasure. In the middle of the day, just working hard all day in that hellish job and the hellish commute. Finally, they get to come home and have a little sex pleasure, you see. That's their refuge, a little sex pleasure. But Prabhupada said, quoting that verse from Bhagavatam, Yan matanaidi grihamedi sukham itu cham. That which is considered the number one pleasure by the materialistic householders, namely sex pleasure, is 10th class pleasure at best. Itu cham is indeed insignificant. So Prabhupada explained that is the position of the sex, that how nasty it is. So people, the most enjoyable thing, the heavenly pleasure of sex, is nasty business from the standpoint of a transcendental vision. And what is the position of all the other types of pleasures? Even sex is nasty business. Disgusting, nasty business, you see. Of course, if one uses it for producing children, that is another thing. for producing saintly children. Then it becomes transcendentalized. Otherwise, it's simply nasty business. So, but then taking the position of the scientist, Sarup Damodar said, but Prabhupada, how to continue the species? If we say that sex is a nasty thing, how to continue the species? And Prabhupada said, you finish it, this condemned world. So Prabhupada wasn't literally, he was making a philosophical point. He wasn't telling us that our householders had to stop propagating. He wasn't saying that. He was just making a philosophical point that we don't have any obligation to, you know, keep the material civilization going. We have no obligation. We have one obligation only, and that is to Krishna. To awaken the dormant Krishna consciousness within our hearts and the hearts of all living beings. You see, this is the mood of Vaishnava. You see, he doesn't want that one person should be suffering in this material existence. That is so beautifully expressed by Bhakta Prahlad in Bhagavatam, and it's given, very nicely given. Svasteyasu vashvasya kala prasidatam dayanti bhutani shivang mato daya manasta brajang bhujatam madok sirjaya veshitam no matarapya haitaki. May there be peace throughout the entire universe. May all envious persons become pacified. May everyone be engaged in bhakti yoga, because by engaging in devotional service, everybody will think of everybody else's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in thoughts of Him. This is the prayer of Prahlada Maharaj, you see. Let all envious persons be pacified. May there be peace throughout the entire universe. A devotee is not interested simply in his own salvation, you see. He can't rest easy. Well, I'm saved now. Who cares? Everybody else goes to hell. It's not his mood of a Vaishnava. His mood is he cannot tolerate to see the suffering souls of this planet. He cannot tolerate it. Therefore, Krishna says, Nachatasman manusheshu kashchan me priya krittamaha bhavita nachametashmad anya priya tarobhavi. Because of that compassion of the Vaishnava, there is no one more dear to me in this world, nor will there ever be anyone more dear to me than that person who has compassion upon the fallen souls of this world. You see, Krishna gives very special recognition to such a devotee, or any devotees. Doesn't matter, sannyasi, grihastha, brahmachari, married, single, European, Indian, American, has nothing to do with any new devotee and senior devotee. It doesn't matter. Any devotee who genuinely wants to do something, who feels compassion for the fallen souls of this world, who genuinely wants to do something to help these poor people come out of their delusion, out of their sleep, out of their suffering condition, smoking, drinking, womanizing, madness, you see. Krishna very gives special mercy to such a devotee. He showers his blessings upon such a devotee. That's a thing. So Prabhupada told us in America, he said, if you feel for your countrymen, then spread this Krishna consciousness movement. They are dying. So if you feel for your your fellow Danes, then spread this Krishna conscious movement all over Denmark and every town and every village. Let everyone become Krishna conscious in Denmark, you see. That is the mood, Krishna consciousness mood, you see. This gives the greatest pleasure to Prabhupada. I know from my own experience, I had some communications with Prabhupada a few times. A few very precious communications I had with Prabhupada in letters. Very, very precious thing. My greatest treasure is those letters from Prabhupada. the time when he expressed the most pleasure and satisfaction with me was when the devotees, I had joined in our Austin temple. Vishnu John Swami had come and opened up the temple in 1971 in Austin, Texas. And in my initiation letter, Prabhupada said to me and two other boys, he said, make our Austin Center a grand success. I had a direct order from Prabhupada, make our Austin Center a grand success. So they say, or not they, the Shastra states, you should take the order of your spiritual master as your life and soul. And the temple president, Vishnu Swami, went on to open another temple in San Antonio. And the new president said, well, we're going to close the temple and go traveling and preaching. I was thinking, well, wait a minute. Papa told me to make this center a success. If they close the center, how am I going to carry out Prabhupada's order? So what to do? Well, in those days you could write Prabhupada. It was a pretty nice time in this kind. In those days you could write Prabhupada a letter. Anybody could write Prabhupada a letter. You see? Wow, what a thing. You could write Prabhupada. Anyone could write Prabhupada. So I wrote Prabhupada a letter. I told him the situation. I was trying to convince Prabhupada that he would say we should keep the temple open. I wanted to give some good points why we should keep the center open. I said, Prabhupada, the people here in Austin are in desperate need of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I think we should keep this temple open. And if they want to leave, it's okay, but I'm willing to stay here and, you see, and take the responsibility for this center. And Prabhupada was so pleased. The answer came in an aerogram. You know an aerogram? It's a one piece of paper and you fold it in a certain way. So the front, it was two letters, one to me and the temple president, an aerogram. So Prabhupada is very pleased with me. Very, very pleased with me. And he wasn't so pleased with the temple president. So you can imagine, you know, your authorities, your temple authority, you're under them, you know. You take instructions for them. So he wasn't very happy with me. Temple president wasn't very happy with me. But I didn't care because I'd please Prabhupada. Of course, I wanted to please my president also, but the first preference is always the spiritual master. He was very pleased that I wanted to stay there and keep the center open because the people are in desperate need of Krishna consciousness. So this is the reality. The people here in Copenhagen are desperately in need of Krishna consciousness. Desperately, desperately, desperately. They often appear to be happy, but it's just due to past pious activities, they have some false sense of happiness and so on. It is simply their good karma that gives them a false sense of happiness for some period of time until they burn off that good karma, and then they'll be dragged down to the most miserable conditions where they know they're really, really miserable, you see. You see, in the Western countries, in Europe, America, we have some karma which has enabled us to have material advancement here, you know. Nice material facilities, transportation, buildings, communication. Some nice material facilities we have in the Western world due to past pious activities. But what are we doing with our past piety? We're throwing it to the wolves. We're totally giving it up, you see. We're becoming very, very impious now, you see. Now, homosexuality is becoming acceptable. You know, we have homosexual politicians, homosexual bishops. It's becoming, if you know, completely acceptable. It's completely against the laws of the scriptures, such things. Of course, we're merciful upon, heterosexuals shouldn't be proud, well, I'm hetero and you're homo. Because actually any sort of sexuality is due to false bodily identification. Our position is, they become asexual. That's our position. You see. Sex only for procreation, that's called asexual. You see. I have no interest in sex. My only interest is serving Krishna. You see, that's called asexual. Celibate. You see. So whether one is an active heterosexual or an active homosexual, either position is false position. Because sex is only properly utilized when we bring Krishna-conscious children into the world. Any other use of sex is against the scripture, is it illicit? So we welcome everyone to come and join, whatever your gender is, whatever your orientation is, it doesn't matter. Let's all come together, forget all of our past conditioning, and let's just all become oriented to Krishna. Krishna oriented. That's our philosophy. Just become oriented to Krishna. We don't need these other things. It's just a waste of time gratifying the material senses. Why try to get pleasure out of your material body when it's a source of misery? It doesn't make sense. They're trying to get intense pleasure from manipulating their bodies. It's completely artificial because it's not you. I say, well, here's a nice bowl of sweet rice, now enjoy it. Will you stick your shirt sleeve in it? Or stick your chowder in the sweet rice? Oh, wow, I'm going to really enjoy this sweet rice. Ah! Is that how you can enjoy the sweet rice? Shaking your chowder in it? You understand the point? The material sense gratification is just your chowder. It's not you. You're trying to gratify your chowder. Why don't you take the sweet rice, you see? Why are you trying to gratify your body? Why don't you gratify yourself? You see, Krishna consciousness means don't engage in sense gratification, engage in self gratification by connecting with Krishna. That is the only gratification for the self, to reconnect with Krishna. Just like, is a light bulb gratified in any other way than being connected with the powerhouse? No. It only becomes gratified when it's connected with the powerhouse. Then it becomes fully gratified. Now it becomes luminous and brilliant. I see. You may try in so many ways to make that light bulb happy, but unless you're connected with the powerhouse, it will remain dead with no light, no life. So our position is not sense gratification, it's self-gratification. And the only self-gratification is to reconnect with the Supreme Self, Krishna. Any other attempt to be happy, simply false illusory. It will not work no matter how hard you try. You'll never be satisfied by gratifying your material body because it's not you. Our philosophy is very simple. Know who you are. And be who you are. That's our very simple philosophy. We are not a cult. A religious cult. We're not a religious cult. We are philosophers. Knowers, seekers, and realizers of the truth. We have understood that I'm not this body, that I'm a spiritual being. There's a Supreme Self who's the origin of all the individual selves, is the origin of all the planets. And now we simply want to reconnect in a relationship with that Supreme Self, you see. We're not presenting some new religion. We're presenting the essence of what actually is real religion. They say there's this religion, that religion. But that's nonsense. It's like saying there's a Danish sun, a German sun, a French sun. No. You may have different names for that sun according to your different languages, but that doesn't mean there's different suns. It's the same sun, seen from different angles of vision. That's the same sun. So God is one. Whether you call him Allah, Jehovah, Krishna, God is one. Seen from different angles, that's all. So real religion means you give up the illusory service to your material body. Of course, whatever you need for health, that is allowed. But beyond that, all of your energy should go into reestablishing your relationship with that Supreme Person who is the source of all existence, who is known by different names and different scriptures, but is most accurately described by the word Krishna. Because that word includes all the qualities and all the characteristics, all the names, the forms, the pastimes, everything regarding the Supreme is included within those two syllables, Krishna. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Why don't you be my human hearing aid, Chaitanya Chanda? You were really good yesterday. Great human hearing aid for a deaf man. Okay, great.
Thank you very much, Gurudev.
I may be okay with him, but others I may not. So.
For a nice class, Gurudev mentioned that we should become asexual in Krishna consciousness.
You just become Krishna conscious and you naturally have no, you're not inclined, one becomes disinclined to sex pleasure in due course. Yeah.
But how to understand what, it's the gross sex life, it's quite easy to understand what that is. But what is subtle sex life? What is that? How to understand that? What is it?
Subtle sex means, Prabhupada describes it as profit, adoration, and distinction. The desire to be adored, the desire to be worshipped, the desire to accumulate wealth. These are subtle types of sex pleasure, you see. To be gratified in different ways, you see. It's like some bogus guru, he may be practicing celibacy, but he derives great pleasure by being worshipped as being God. You see, his followers worship him as God, and he finds great satisfaction. Oh, I'm God. That's subtle sex. When we see such gurus, they end up falling down and having gross sex anyway. Anyone who's off the track like that, they can't control their senses. Other questions?
It's again in regard. Thank you for lecture. Please accept my humble obeisances. It's in regard again in this sex life, because you emphasized a lot on the word nasty. But in the spiritual world, they also they're completely pure. Our mission is to get pure, to get purified. And then sex is not nasty, it's different. It's
what
completely
saying?
Different things.
Okay.
In the spiritual life, they also have sex, but there it's completely pure. Here we call it nasty.
In the spiritual world, even though the women are unbelievably beautiful and the men also have unbelievably wonderful looking features, there are husbands and wives, but their attraction is to Krishna. The spiritual world, just like Krishna and the gopis, they never had sex. They never had any sex pleasure. There was no sexual intercourse in the Rasa Lila. So the spiritual world is not a place of sexual. It's not a place of sexual intercourse because there's no birth there. Everyone's existing eternally. They don't need to propagate to have kids because everybody is existing eternally. So there's no need for sex pleasure in the spiritual world.
When our kids are born, it's just the sex is done in a different way. It's not this physical thing that we have here on earth that we are programmed to do, conditioned to do with our bodies. It's on a subtle level. It's not material like sex. It's a different. It's exchange of energy, and I'm trying to understand. So you just transcend yourself. You just think of this pure thing. It's nothing to do with this, as you said, nasty physical thing. It's just on a different conscious level.
So it's she's saying they have spiritual sex in the spiritual world. She's saying she's just trying to understand.
No, they don't have sexual intercourse.
It's more subtle. It's more subtle. It's not like gross with the bodies, but it's more subtle.
They have everyone's love and affection is going to Krishna. All the love and affection is going to Krishna.
It's not sex, it's exchange of energy, it's like communication. It's not sex, it's different.
She says it's not sex, it's exchange of energy, like communication.
They have the pastimes, the pleasure experienced by the Brijavasis in their loving relationship with Krishna and each other in relationship with Krishna is inconceivable. That exchange of energy in everything they do, every word, every thought, every gesture, every single aspect of their association with each other is unlimitedly nectarian and relishable. Everyone is sexually oriented on Radha and Krishna. This is called Adi Rasa. The original sex is Radha and Krishna. So everybody's absorbed in that relationship with Radha and Krishna. They want to see that Radha and Krishna are together and enjoying. That's everyone's move. Not that I want to have my own Radharani, or, you know, no one thinks that way, you see. Everyone is thinking, how can I serve this relationship between Radha and Krishna? And that gives everyone complete, total satisfaction. Everyone's completely satisfied just by arranging for this wonderful love, this wonderful romance, you see. How can I enhance the romance of Radha and Krishna by my service, you see? Especially the gopi girls, you see. They're especially in that mood. How to enhance this. And Krishna also sometimes he associates with others as well. But not like Radharani. But the whole point is everything that's going on there is simply to enhance the loving relationship between Shri Radha and Krishna. Everything, the whole spiritual world, whole Krishna Loka planet revolves around that relationship between Radha and Krishna. Everybody's totally satisfied seeing their relationship. I guess all the men and all the women are completely satisfied, and nobody's thinking they have to have their own, you know, imitation Radha Krishna relationship. No one is thinking that way. Although even the husbands and wives in the spiritual world, but still they're just completely oriented to Radha and Krishna's relationship. Yeah, does that help? I hope.
That was my curiosity. You still have a husband and wife, like a family, but it's just different. Different consciousness, and I'm trying to understand. So thank you very much.
She says she's just trying to understand.
The husband and wives are working together to please serve Radha and Krishna. It's like even in ISKCON we have, you know, devotees, married couples who are, you know, completely celibate, and of course they may have had children, but now they've become celibate, or they never had children. One can do either thing. It's either way is okay. And now they're just fully absorbed in serving Krishna. That's their only interest. And they, husband and wife, work together to facilitate each other's Krishna consciousness. There's no question of male, female, or sex, or this or that. It's simply working together in a loving mood of helping each other in their Krishna consciousness. And the same simile in the spiritual realm. Yeah?
But in material world, it's quite different. Because if somebody has children, their attention goes to them, and even though they have finished the business and engaged in service, but their attraction for their children, grandchildren, is always remaining.
That's true. The difference between the material and spiritual world is here, when you have children, due to... there's a tremendous amount of affection that goes, these are my children, these are extensions of me, you see. There's a tremendous amount of affection that goes into the children. In the spiritual world, you don't have that. That's a bad. The affection is, there's no diversion of the affection away from Krishna and Radharani. All the affection is for Krishna and Radharani, every bit of it. Any other questions?
Can I ask a little more to this? Is it that they do have affection for their children, but it's just they have more affection for Krishna?
So it's interesting, but yeah, obviously, they do have affection for their children. But it's subordinate to their affection to Krishna. And that's a good point. Just like we read that in the Krishna book, how the cowherd boys, they were stolen by Ramaji, yes. And Krishna was thinking, how can I go home today without all the cowherd boys in the calves? The mothers will be completely devastated. So I will expand myself as all the cows and boys, the calves and the boys, so the mothers will not be disturbed. So when that afternoon, when they went back to their mothers and the mother cows, the mothers and the mother calves had an overwhelming increase of affection for their what appeared to be their offspring, because it was actually Krishna. So that's a fact. There is affection. But it's all in Krishna's service. It's everything. It's all dovetailed perfectly with Krishna, every bit of it. There's nothing separate from Krishna. Just like when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. So they do have affection. And that affection is all dovetailed or connected with Krishna's, their love for Krishna. But the fact is, they do, the affection for Krishna is proven by that pastime, is more than their affection for their children. Because when Krishna played the part of their child or their calf, their affection was multiplied many, many times over. That's a good point. Yes.
I just heard some in the lecture that you have an external guru and an internal guru.
Yes, that's true. There's two gurus. There's the internal guru and external guru. Internal guru is called Chaitya Guru. That's Paramatma, Krishna within your heart. External guru, that is your Diksha Guru, the one who gives you initiation. When you're very serious to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He being situated in your heart, knowing fully well your state of consciousness, He will then bring you into contact with a bona fide spiritual master externally, from whom then you can take shelter, instruction, initiation, guidance, etc. So the internal guru is called Chaitya Guru Paramatma. The external guru is the initiating spiritual master. Does that clear you up? Yeah. Any other question?
So can you in meditation meet a pure spiritual? It's like in the meditation, like is there someone from the spiritual world just guiding? Is this possible? Because it's some kind of connection with the...
As I understand it, like in meditation, can somebody guide you from the spiritual world directly?
If one is completely purified, it is possible that you can be guided from within the heart. Prabhupada told us that He could instruct us from within the heart if our hearts were pure. It is possible. But it's also possible when you're not pure to think that you're being guided and it's just your own mental concoctions. So be careful.
First we have to be pure. Confirmed.
That's right. And the way to become pure is to follow the standard process given by Rupa Goswami of how to become pure. You have to have faith in the process. You have to take shelter of devotees. You have to be initiated by the bona fide spiritual master. You have to get free of all the anarthas in your heart. You have to come to the stage of firm faith, nishta stage. Then you have to have come to the stage of unlimited taste for the name, where you can chant for millions of years and never get tired. Constant chanting for millions of years and you never get tired. That's the Ruchi stage. And the Asakti stage, where you're completely, totally attached to Krishna and nothing but Krishna. You see. And then that's the preliminary stage of pure love of God. Then you go to Bhava stage and then Prema, where you become completely purified. So, and it's described in the Bhava stage, you actually begin to you realize your rasa in the Asakti stage, you begin to have exchanges with Krishna in the Bhava stage, and by associating with Krishna in your original relationship with Him, then you become completely purified and take the Prema stage. So that's really, really far, far beyond us. Some of us are not even initiated yet. We're just out in the sadhu sangha stage, step number two. Those of us who are initiated, we're battling it out the anartha nivritti stage for years and years and years. We're battling with sleepiness, laziness, lustiness, greed, all that dirt we've accumulated for millions of lifetimes. We're just battling it out in the Anartha Nivritti stage. We're not even anishta yet. So we can't even dream about, you know, about the higher stages right now. We can just hanker for them as we continue to bad fight it out with our anarthas. Yeah?
Isn't it, even if somebody is slightly pure, Krishna from as Chaitya Guru will guide one to the Guru. So that is the inspiration. That is a pure stage. And if we can accept that.
If one is slightly pure?
Yeah.
If one is sincerely wanting, that is a pure. See, the purity is already there. There's different degrees of purity. I mean, even the person on the Shraddha stage, he has that little bit of purity, you see. He has some faith in God. He has some faith in the process of self-realization. That is a certain degree of purity. And then by associating devotees, he becomes more purified. Now he has a greater percentage of purity. Then he gets initiated, he becomes even more purified. It's just a gradual process of becoming, you know, a little bit pure, a little bit more pure, and finally you go from 1%, 10%, 20%, 35%, 100% pure in the prema stage, you see. So purity is there. Actually, Prabhupada said, it's interesting, he said there's three kinds of pure devotees, Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttam Adhikari. So how do you understand that? Well, there's a little bit pure, a little bit more pure, and there's completely pure. You see. Everyone is considered pure devotee, but how pure, what percentage purity do you have? You see? You're all pure devotees. We're all pure devotees, but how pure, that depends. That depends.
Can you judge, yeah. Can you judge the purity when Krishna guides us by accepting the scripture, the knowledge from the scripture, knowledge from the devotees, we will immediately become favorable?
Not by accepting knowledge?
Yes.
We become favorable?
Immediately accept and absorb what is Krishna asking us. Just like it, to Arjuna, he gives the knowledge. Tad vidhi pranipatena pariprasnana sarvadharman paritajyat yakkarosi yadasnasi. So the devotee absorbs it like Arjuna.
If one hears from Krishna and follows the instructions, then you become purified.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So in the preliminary stage, if the devotee is sincere and if there is any desire or pure desire to attain Krishna, then they will immediately absorb all the instructions that the devotee will present to them. They won't.
If one is sincere, then he'll take whatever instructions come as mercy.
That's right.
Not that I pick and choose. Well, this instruction I like, this one I don't like. That means he's not sincere. He has a cheating mentality. This one I pick and choose. Well, this one I like, no meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, that's not a good one. No, sincerity means whatever Krishna says, I will accept it. That is sincerity. No picking and choosing business. Yes?
Nowadays, the spiritual master is often far away from the disciple, and we may only see our spiritual master once a year or twice a year. I've heard also that the Shiksha Guru is more important than the Diksha Guru, and in general they are the same, but also we have also immediate instructors and guides near where we are serving.
Summarize it for me.
If you can just explain, like, I heard they said the Shiksha Guru is more important than...
Is the Shiksha Guru more important?
So if you can just elaborate this Shiksha Guru concept, what it is compared to...
What is the proper understanding of Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru? Okay, Prabhupada very clearly answered your question in a letter that we received in our Austin temple years ago. He said that you have your guru, your initiating spiritual master is your spiritual master, you see. He is your spiritual master. Not somebody else is your initiating guru. He is your spiritual master. Bas, finished. But others whose instructions help you to serve your spiritual master, you can accept them also as spiritual master, insofar as they help you serve your spiritual master. Not that you take their instructions, ignoring his instructions. That's bogus. But anyone whose instructions help you to serve your spiritual master's orders, that person is a siksha guru. You understand? You actually only have one spiritual master. Your initiating guru is your spiritual master, and that's it. But others are also accepted if they help you to serve your spiritual master. Does that make it clear? Yeah. And your spiritual master's orders, even if you're not associated with him, his lectures are there, his books. You see, you know by reading, not that you have a pact of personal instructions. Of course, they're always nice if you can get them. But his instructions are clearly given in his lectures and his books, and that's what you're supposed to do. And those instructions are just as personal as a personal instruction, actually. We're thinking, oh, I got to have a personal. No. The instructions that are given in his lectures, in his writings, those are just as personal as anything that he wrote you. Just like how Prabhupada wrote me, I have about 10 letters of personal instructions. But what's in Prabhupada's books for me are just as personal as the letters. They're just as personal. I do treasure the letters, but I treasure, there's so many instructions in his books that I treasure equally, and some even more than the letters, you see. Does that help you? Does that answer? Okay. Yes.
My question is, you mentioned there are different levels of purity. So, is there a difference between pure devotional service and unalloyed devotional service?
Is there a difference between pure devotional service and unalloyed pure devotional service?
They are the same thing. 100% pure devotional service means unalloyed. An alloy in the science of metallurgy, an alloy is something that is mixed with a metal to make a combination metal, you see. I think steel is an alloy, isn't it? I'm not a metallurgist. Anyone here study metallurgy? No metallurgists in the crowd? Steel, I believe, is a combination of various metals. But there is such a thing in metallurgy. I'm not an expert. But the point is that unalloyed, you see, without any mixture, with any tinge of... Prabhupada told me, he said, no jnana, nor karma, and no yoga. All material desire is zero. That's what he wrote me in one letter. See, that's called unalloyed devotional service. There's no desire for fruitive activities, speculative knowledge, or mystic powers. Completely, all material desire is completely zero, you see. That is unalloyed bhakti, pure, 100% pure devotional service. And that's what we will achieve by following this process given by Prabhupada in his books. If you take this process as your life and soul, you follow these instructions given by Prabhupada very seriously, very sincerely, and very steadily throughout your life, you're guaranteed to achieve pure bhakti and go back and attain your original identity in the pastimes of the Lord in his transcendental kingdom. Guaranteed. Anything else? Yeah.
You said that someone who has little faith in Krishna is a little pure. Mm. So should it be understood then that purity is the same as faith?
They run on parallel lines. The more you have, the more you're pure, the more your faith increases.
Okay.
They go side by side. As you become more pure, you have more faith. As you have more faith, that's a sign of becoming more pure. And that, we just see them on two rails on the track going side by side. Faith and purity. Therefore, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6:23 states, yasya deve para bhaktir tata deve tata guru tasyaite ketita hyarta prakashan de mahatmanaha. Only under those who have unflinching faith in the words of Guru and Krishna are all the imports of the Vedas revealed. So if you get to that point of 100% faith, which is the same as 100% purity, you've reached the end of the track and you got to the destination, you see. Your faith has become completely unflinching. At that point, then you have perfect realization of all the Vedic wisdom. You see. So just try to increase your faith more and more and more. Have unflinching faith in the words of Sri Guru, in the words of Krishna, and all the Vedic wisdom become revealed to you. You'll just be absolutely amazed what you realize when you come to that stage. That's what the sages tell us. I'm praying for the day when I can get there. Yes?
Is your faith increasing by the merciful spiritual master? I think it's how it gets.
Faith increases by the mercy of spiritual master?
Increasing more and more by the mercy of the spiritual master, by him putting Shakti in your heart and guiding you and be there for you, and faith is increasing. So that is very important.
Faith increases by Guru's mercy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very important who is the spiritual master.
Is it very important who is the spiritual master?
It's very important.
Who is the spiritual master?
Yes, you have to have a spiritual master who is who is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, because you can only advance so far as your spiritual master is advanced. One should be very careful to find a spiritual master who is very, very advanced. And of course we have Prabhupada, who is the most advanced. He is the most powerful acharya in the history of the whole universe for delivering Krishna consciousness. So, if the person you choose as your guru is purely following Srila Prabhupada, 24 hours a day, and purely repeating the teachings of Prabhupada, then even if your spiritual master is not completely a Mahabhagavat, then the potency of the Mahabhagavat will come through him. Just like if somebody comes to your door and says, "Guess what? Some multi-billionaire, he wanted to bestow $1 billion upon you. So here's a cashier's check for $1 billion. I'm delivering a cashier's check for $1 billion to you today." You say, "Well, sir, let me ask you this. Are you a billionaire?" "Oh, no, I'm not." "Well, I won't accept it then." Would you deny the DHL man, "My dear DHL representative, are you a billionaire? Well, if you're not, I'm not going to accept this cashier's check for $1 billion from you." Would you deny the $1 billion check from the DHL man who was not a billionaire? No, of course we'll take it. As long as the check doesn't bounce, I don't care whether you're a pauper in the street. Just give me that thing if. So Prabhupada gave that example, you see. As long as your spiritual master is purely representing Srila Prabhupada, you're in a safe zone. But the more he is advanced, personally, also, that's extra mercy. So one should seek out a highly advanced disciple of Prabhupada, a highly, highly advanced disciple of Prabhupada, who's beyond desire for profit, adoration, distinction, women, wealth, and followers. One should be very, very discriminative to find that spiritual master who can give one the greatest potency to advance in Krishna consciousness. Okay, then, we'll stop here. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.